This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
I hope you weren't hungry when you started listening to the show, because we've been talking about cookies and desserts pretty much nonstop for the last hour. With you tonight, it's Ian.
And Mark. Oops, sorry.
Oh, wow. Sorry, go ahead.
He's not used to this.
How long has it been, Mark?
Mark.
The captain.
Yeah. Here on Free Talk Live, the phones are open as always. You can bring up anything you want. That is what we do here on Free Talk Live. But we've been focusing on a cookie crackdown. The government thugs here in Keene, New Hampshire, calling themselves code enforcement, decided they were going to go after a couple of moms who had put a cart out in front of their houses.
Wait. Bitcoin is computer code, right?
Well, yeah. That's what I think, but the federal government seems to think it's money.
I mean... Like, for
security.
Factually speaking.
Yes, correct.
Right? Cryptocurrency of all varieties, types,
is
software.
Yes.
All right, so therefore it is code. It's made up of code. That's how it exists. All right. So instead of all of these alphabet agencies, the FBI, the ATF, the postal, whatever, shouldn't code enforcement be the one coming after you?
That's funny.
Different kind of code. This is the kind of code that is completely arbitrary and made by lawyers instead of the code.
Right.
That
these are not even laws. So there's laws. What are the other words?
Statutes.
Ordinances.
Ordinances
and codes. Right. Yes.
This was actually a point that Eric Voorhees was making the other day.
That guy's awesome, by the way.
He is awesome. Former Free Talk Live amplifier from way back. Before he was crypto Eric Voorhees, he was one of our listeners and supporters many years ago. But now he's like a superstar, basically, in the cryptocurrency world. He's the founder, former CEO of Shapeshift, which has decentralized, by the way, into a decentralized autonomous organization, the only corporation... Or the first one, at least. Maybe there's been others since then. But the first corporation to decentralize itself.
Yeah.
To eliminate its board of directors, to eliminate its corporate, you know, offices, to completely eliminate all the trappings of corporationism.
As a longtime listener to Free Talk Live, as well as a host of Free Talk Live, I was both enthused by Eric Voorhees and his... appearances here on the show, as well as Shapeshift, his creation. And then at some point, Shapeshift acquired KeepKey, which was the hardware wallet, the number two competitor to, what's the other one?
Do they still have it?
KeepKey still exists, yeah.
Is it still part of Shapeshift now that they're decentralized?
Yes.
Huh.
Like, you can connect your KeepKey.
I wonder how that works.
I'm not sure.
How do you have a decentralized hardware manufacturer?
I don't know that the hardware manufacturer is decentralized, but you can connect your hardware wallet to the decentralized network to conduct your business or whatever. So my point is that I went through all of this in real time. Like, instead of buying the Trezor, I bought the KeepKey because I was in Washington State, and I knew that the KeepKey headquarters was... You know, an hour's drive away from me.
Okay.
So if anything ever went totally awry, I could just go be like, dudes, let me knock on the door until somebody came, you know, whatever.
Where's my Bitcoin?
Right. And so that's why I went with the KeepKey over the Trezor.
Okay.
At some point, KeepKey was acquired by Shapeshift, Eric Voorhees' company. Mm. They decided to buy this company so that they had a hardware component to attach to their software component. And then, like, a whole bunch of laws started kicking in, and, like, you couldn't get to shapeshift.io from a Washington state IP address, right?
Because Washington's one of the worst states for crypto.
Totally,
right?
And you would go there and it'd be like, sorry, your state sucks. I'm paraphrasing, yeah. Right? But, like, that's the message that was on your screen.
Also, New York.
New York. Same thing. There were a few other states as well. But, like, I figured out, you know, VPNs exist,
sure.
And I figured out ways to get around it. But at some point, I attempted to get my money off of my KeepKey, my coins, my crypto, and it was like, oh, sorry, you need to KYC for a Shapeshift account, and I'm like, Voorhees, what the hell? Like, in my head,
sure.
I'm cussing him out, you know, in my head, because I know he's the guy who founded the thing, and, like, he took it off, you know.
It always feels like a dirty, dirty trick.
And there was this period of time.
When they demand the KYC to get the money that you gave them out. Like, if you wanted KYC, you should have KYC'd me when I sent the money, before I sent the money in,
because
then I wouldn't have done it.
Right.
So now you KYC me on the way out, you're a trickster.
That's exactly my point of view, and where I was coming from in this particular instance was I was trying to get some of my money off of the KeepKey, and all of the prompts were like, you need to sign up for an account, and you need to provide us with your ID, and, you know, all the KYC stuff. And so in my mind, I'm like, freeze, right? You know, I'm cussing them out. I sent some messages to their support team, and I'm like, in a nutshell, I'm like, look, you didn't require any of this on the way in. You need to provide your people a way out, you know, because they didn't need it on the way in.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the long and the short of it. There were many things that happened in between, but the point is that they made a method available for anybody who put their money onto a KeepKey prior to the acquisition and the KYC requirements to be able to get their money off, which I took full advantage of, and thank you, Mr. Voorhees, for making that available. Because, like,
only time I've ever heard that happening.
Yeah. like, but I went through this in real time, right? And there was a period of time when like, Mr. Voorhees and his organization were in this transition period where they required KYC, where they required these things to get on the platform.
Yeah.
And, like, because it was the only thing they could do to stay afloat. Now,
they were probably being threatened by the federal government.
Yeah.
The story
has
never come out. We don't know any of the details on it. He's always kept his lips sealed about what level of pressure he was under to take what was originally a company, Shapeshift, for listeners that don't know, made its kind of bones back in the day as being kind of the first company that allowed people to exchange one crypto for another without having to have an account.
Right.
That was what it was all about. That was why they became so popular. And then eventually, at one point, they said, sorry, guys, we got to tell you, you need an account now. You got to go through and show your ID.
Well,
and they became what they were originally against.
Yep.
And he never has addressed what they did to him.
They became what they were against, and then they became what they were for again.
Correct.
Right. There was
a redemption.
And that's my point. That's what I'm getting at, is that here's a guy who was, and in my opinion is, still libertarian, as you know, ilk. But the only way he could keep his organization afloat was to weather the storm of, oh my God, guys, I'm really sorry, but, like, I have to do this thing.
Yeah.
Right? In order to keep make the transition, in order to have the ability to redeem himself on the other side of this.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
he was bright enough to see a way through it.
You think he saw that back then?
I think he did, actually. I think he was like,
'cause it was years before he came up with the idea.
I think he was like, hey, if I just do this thing now and lose some customers, lose some users.
Yeah, he lost a lot.
Right, you know, that I will get them back once I decentralize and reestablish.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he was wrong. Like, I have gone back and used Shapeshift now. I got rid of the KeepKey, right, because the Trezor is just a superior product at this point. But I have gone back and used Shapeshift since its decentralization, since I knew that I could, and, like, I could get it without KYCing, and I could transduce one crypto into another. I have used it since then.
And it works?
It works. Okay. There are other services that have popped up since then, so he has competition. But what I applaud him for is the redemption, and you mentioned it. And this is a thing that so many people miss out in the human experience, right? Everybody wants to sort of deny, you know, oh, somebody did something bad, screw that guy, blacklist, block, cancel, whatever, yeah, yeah. right? And, like, you got to give people a chance, human beings.
Yeah,
you
sure.
got to give human beings a chance for redemption. And so I've been following Voorhees on, you know, social media and Twitter and, you know, the all the news sites and all that kind of stuff. And, like, he still remains, near as I can tell, with all of his, you know, publications, at least within social media, a principled voluntarist, right? Like, yep. he still believes in these things. He found himself in a situation where he could not keep the organization afloat without compliance.
Yep.
And I get that.
That must have really hurt him to do that.
I can't imagine.
He said as much.
Has he?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't imagine.
I don't think he's ever told the story about what actually happened. Has he?
No, I don't think he has. Yeah. But
that's what I want to know.
I've had conversations with him on the phone.
I want to know who approached him in the, you know, the back room or wherever and what it was that they said to him.
And that could be like a forthcoming book or something. Yeah. You know, we don't know. But the point is that he went from decentralized principle to, oh crap, I found myself in a situation where government...
Well, it was never decentralized. I mean, he had the...
Well, Shapeshift was a voluntarist-based organization.
But it wasn't decentralized. It was a centralized server.
But it didn't require... At the time he launched it, it didn't require any government clearance, KYC, anything like that. It was permissionless
in that way.
It was, right.
That's true.
And so...
He gave this speech at this event called Permissionless recently.
Right.
And that has been shared around. I shared it the other day because it's an excellent speech. There was a point I was originally going to make before we started talking about Shapeshift, and I've completely forgotten what that was. But there was something that he said during that speech that was relevant to what we were talking about. And it was all about not asking for permission to do things. And I love it.
And bringing us back to the cookie thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Or a lemonade stand, or selling flowers, or having a rummage sale, or a garage sale.
Some
in
places
your yard.
There's a garage sale license.
What the hell is that about?
It's crazy. It's about extracting.
I don't know in New Hampshire, though.
No, not around here.
How is that even a thing? How does that exist?
Because people will do it. Because if you tell people to jump, they ask how high, and they do
it. It brings me back to the point that I was trying to make earlier, which is people are currently the problem. Right? The system is going to demand things. It's going to, you must and you should and we have guns and badges and all this kind of, it's the people right now. The common, average, ordinary person that exists in the United States of America that is the problem for going along, for going, oh, yes, Mr. Badge, Mr. Gun,
tell me what else
yes,
to do.
Mr. Official, well, how else can I please you
today?
They
say the people get the government they deserve. Right? If the people are indeed the problem, then they're getting the government that they deserve.
I don't know about you, but I don't deserve the government that I have.
I agree with you, but we're not in the majority, are we?
That's the problem. There is no majority, right? Like, there's a bunch of people, and all of them have their problems with the government, but the problem is that we keep saying, well, yeah, I want human freedom, except in this particular area. And in order to get our particular area, whatever that particular area might be, we have to agree with other people who want it in another area and in another area. And then pretty soon you've got this organization that has legitimacy. And, I mean, you know, it just kind of ruins everybody's party.
Sure does.
We don't get the evolution until everybody learns to lead themselves.
Oh, I'm not sure it's an evolution. I think that what we have in the United States is a devolution. We go to Honduras, and you can sell anything you want on the side of the road.
Hmm. Okay.
And you don't have to be a kid to do it. You don't have to be, I'm selling lemonade. You don't have to hide behind the veneer of innocence.
How much can I sell Mark Edge for?
Well, is that true in the cities?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would think so.
You don't think there's any payoffs going on there?
I think that you could very well have violence used against you, but it probably wouldn't be government-oriented.
But in the mafia sense, the non-government mafia sense, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about some moms that got cracked down on here in Keene, New Hampshire, for running a cookie stand, a cookie dessert stand that people could leave cash or mobile payments and choose from a daily rotating dessert and pastry selection. The story from the Keene Sentinel. of items like carrot cake, whoopie pies, cake pops, and pumpkin doodles.
Oh my God, that carrot cake is so dangerous! You might die!
Which were apparently pumpkin muffins rolled in cinnamon sugar, which sounds fantastic. They installed a security camera, which you mentioned earlier, Captain, to deter people from stealing the sweets, but they only had one instance of someone taking cookies without paying. Now, they were only there for about a month and a half, which they posted to social media. They posted the recording. As they saw more interest, they left a light on in the stand into the night for people to visit and buy a treat after sunset. I mean, that is incredibly ballsy.
They're taking a page out of, like, Tom Baudette, Motel 6?
Leave a light on for you. Oh, wow. The younger listeners don't even know what that is.
I've come to the...
Wasn't he an author? Who was Tom Baudette?
I come to the conclusion that sometimes things that I say are dated.
That's one of them right there. But not, I mean, I got to say, got to give him credit for being willing to leave the product out after dark. I mean, it'd be one thing to leave it out during the daytime. People are less likely to do shenanigans during the day when other people can see. But at night, you know, you're more likely to get some sort of heroin addict.
These cameras, though, make themselves known. There's little flashing lights.
Yeah,
and,
true.
You know, these kinds of things that...
But this is, I mean, if there's a hood in Keene...
There's a lot of hoods.
There's one.
This is...
Oh, I thought you meant hoodies. That's the other thing they can do is, you know, if it's cold, then you got an excuse to cover your head.
People actually wear ski masks here.
Yeah, yeah, that does happen. But during the day, it would look a little weird for somebody to be...
Unless it's mid-January.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd still be, you know, I mean, the thing is that so far, nobody had really, you know, only one person has done a cookie heist.
The baking partners were considering the idea of building a website and listing ingredients for their creations in their last few weeks of operation with a QR code that would be on the item's wrapping. So they're looking to improve, looking to, you know, expand. She says that way you can see what's in every recipe rather than it being an additional waste of more product, more ink and paper. Then we'd have to raise the prices on the items for something simple like that. But on Wednesday, a city inspector whom Carrie and Hurley, the two moms, also consider a friend. Well, I'm going to tell you, ladies, this is not your friend. Okay, they're not doing something that a friend would do. This person, the city inspector, who is unnamed, visited the site and, quote, asked them to end the sales, which, of course, is not what
asked.
Right? Yeah. The government the media always.
They didn't intimidate in any way. Force their
way.
No,
they weren't told they would be punished if they continued. No, of course not. It was just a nice ask to stop the sales.
Like, if that were true, wouldn't the supposed neighbors who complained,
mm-hmm.
who maybe went over to them and were like, hey, would you mind not selling things in your yard?
But we know they didn't do that.
We know they didn't.
So Carrie, one of the moms, says, I didn't even think to check with the city. She noted she was observing state laws on having a food-based cottage industry business, which you cited earlier, Captain, mm-hmm. and had used resources from the Hannah Grimes Center for Entrepreneurship on how to get started. So she thought she was well within the law. She also
worked with an NGO to get things started, right?
I think that's what Hannah Grimes is, yeah. So she also had a 5-year ServSafe food safe certification that she received when she took
the
course.
What does that even mean?
ServSafe is a private, thank you for asking, it's a private certification that you might see if you're at a Panera or some, you know,
is
restaurant.
Is it like the free market version of like UL listing?
Kind of, okay. Yeah, except for food
service. Right. Okay.
If you look like in the back of the food place where you like to get your food, you might see a plaque up about ServSafe certification. It's fairly common within the restaurant industry. It's completely voluntary from what I understand, and it goes to show, and they have their employees take a ServSafe test so they know, you know, that you're supposed to wash your hands after handling the meat, and, you know, there's a certain procedure for what you're supposed to do and what order, and they test that stuff. You get certified. And she's been certified for 5 years when she was the manager of the Head Start program at a key nonprofit in town.
So near as we can tell, according to the information in this article, both of these bakers knew how to bake, knew how to do it safely, cleanly, without contaminating anybody or poisoning anybody, et cetera, and so on, right?
But they didn't have the permission slip.
They didn't pay money to the state?
Though the stand seemed to enjoy appreciation from community members, the moms were told that the city had received complaints, which Keene Community Development Director Jesse Rounds confirmed by phone on Friday. Carrie said one complaint questioned whether any of the items for sale should be refrigerated, which she disputes by saying none of them required refrigeration. She also noted a...
Well, the lady with the ServSafe certification said that none of them needed refrigeration, but the person just simply asked a question. The answer to your question, concerned citizen, is no.
Right. Like, do you go to the cookie aisle in the grocery store and find refrigerated cookies?
No.
Do you even go to the bakery aisle in your local grocery store and find refrigerated cookies?
No.
Sound like busybodies who work for the city just sitting in the, having their little coffee break thinking, I don't care to be
Mrs. Kravitz's.
She also noted a wine cooler that she and Hurley added as a safeguard to help chill items so ingredients wouldn't melt. Another, she said, referenced the lack of ingredients shown on the items. So another complaint was complaining about no ingredients. Now, again, this is something that you would want to take to the business owner,
right?
Okay? Oh, I noticed your cookies. I'm interested in buying them, but I'd like to know what's in them before I buy them. That is what a decent person would go and do.
Now, also, too, it could be that, I don't know, somebody just starting out in selling something.
Mm-hmm.
Right, is first concerned about making the product. Right?
Sure.
Secondly, let's put the product out somewhere where people can buy it.
Yep.
Right? Now, once that goes well, then we can think about, hey, let's put some ingredients on the
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely.
Maybe let's start a website. Maybe let's have a brand. Maybe
they were
let's...
talking about all of those things, but they never got to it. They never got to that point because they've been stopped now.
My understanding, and I don't know if the article
goes into
it. I
want these cookies back.
Me too.
I feel like I've been robbed by these concerned citizens.
Yeah. My understanding, maybe the article doesn't go into it. My understanding was that they were developing a website, that they were developing a QR code that you could scan with your phone that showed the ingredients of whatever the heck it is you were going to buy. And so, like, this was all sort of forthcoming. I don't, you know, these people who are supposedly complaining, I feel like, have never started a business of their own, right? They don't know how it goes. It is incredibly difficult to, first of all, develop a thing that tastes good, right? And then go, okay, how can I sell this, right? Well, okay, you just need to target some people with some good taste buds. Right? Generally, your own backyard is where you find these people.
Now, you hope that it wasn't the competition that is the anonymous complaining
party.
It could be the competition, the people that have a store, the people that have a license. There's always
some local church ladies who don't want them competing with the local bake sale.
And the bureaucrat from the city, the Keene Community Development Director, says he didn't have the complaints on hand, but he said one of the core issues was the stand had not gone through the food licensing process with the city. He says many other parts of the state just use the state code and their cottage license is a lower bar. We work with the interested vendor and go look at their kitchen. Make sure that their process is safe. We're going to continue here in moments. You can share your thoughts. It's Free Talk Live.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA USA News Update. The last three suspects charged in connection with the attempted kidnapping of Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer are being acquitted. Eric Moleiter, William Knoll, and Michael Knoll were each acquitted on one count of providing material support for a terrorist act. They were the last three of 14 total suspects arrested in connection. Nine other defendants have already been convicted and issued lengthy prison terms. NASA Director Bill Nelson announcing a new Chief of UFO Research, or UAP, as they are now known.
Did not find any evidence that UAP have an extraterrestrial origin, but we don't know what these UAP are.
Nelson explained Thursday the results of an earlier independent study. He says the research will be genuine and that NASA will be transparent about the process and its findings. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll-free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live. You can join the show. 603-283-6160. If you want to comment on this cookie crackdown here in Keene, where they've targeted the city code people, the thugs.
There's this, do you know the comedian Brian Posehn?
I don't think so, no.
He was in a couple of different TV shows, Just Shoot Me, and he was in Big Bang Theory.
Okay.
He's a nerd.
I've seen the Big Bang Theory. That was on while I was in jail.
Yeah, he's a nerd, but he's a comedian, a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. But he's also a metalhead. He's one of, like,
which one is he in that,
like,
show?
Jim. He's the in Big Bang Theory. He's the geologist.
I don't know which one that is.
He's the tall, skinny guy with the big beard who's trying to date the eventual wife of. Anyway, my point is that he's also a metalhead. He loves heavy metal, and he wrote a song called "Metal by Numbers," which he got a bunch of, you know, we'll call them famous heavy metal musicians. Scott Ian of Anthrax helped him put this song together. And the lyrics go, metal by numbers, 1, 2, 3, follow these rules and you'll see. Metal by numbers, you sound like a Wookiee. Metal by numbers, cookie. Okay. Right. Because he's making fun of this sort of formulaic approach that,
by numbers.
That many heavy metal musicians have these days that make them sound homogenous and the same instead of, you know, being inspired artists and doing things differently. He's like, oh, here's a formula
that
most people follow to make this heavy metal song.
Right.
And so he made a song about that, which I thought was brilliant and, like, also comedic, right? Mm-hmm. As a parody artist and a metal fan, like, it almost brought these two... It almost brought these two things together, right? Not that he's not necessarily a parody artist, but he is a stand-up comedian, and he wrote this song as sort of an editorial, if you will, opinion on like how he thinks the heavy metal songwriting process has devolved into this formulaic thing that's totally predictable.
Yeah,
Jack Black did
something similar.
With his band, whatever that was called,
Tenacious D,
right?
Yes. You can't kill the metal.
And, you know, it was amazing to hear, like, there was just something really different about what they were doing. And I can't remember what the other guy's name is in Tenacious D, but they were, you know, it was just, their songs are unique and a joy to listen to.
It's JB.
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 Jack Black.
Yeah. Jack Black and, what's the other guy's name?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
Fables and, oh my gosh. No, I should know.
You're
this.
Just not a big enough fan, Catherine.
No, oh my God, no! I just apparently am of the short-term memory loss variety fan.
Well, anyway, we were talking about these moms that have been targeted by the so-called
Kyle Gass,
yes.
City of
the
Keene,
Kyle Gass Project,
the thugs from the so-called code enforcement department. The code enforcer in this case calls himself the Keene Community Development Director, which sounds a lot nicer. That sounds a lot nicer than code enforcer. Jesse Round.
Tell me what kind of community development this guy has engaged in.
Well, see, they want a very controlled community where they get to say whether or not you get to sell cookies.
So they're not developing the community, they're developing the control.
Correct. Yeah, that would be a more honest term, the Keene Control Director.
All right.
But in this case, he's citing that the state code is a lower bar. Their cottage license, which you were talking about earlier, Captain. There's now an easier system, apparently, within New Hampshire, if you're not in a terrible city like Keene, that you can supposedly just make delicious goods in your home and sell them from a cart out in front of your house without permission.
Pardon my ignorance, but my guess would be that a New Hampshire state code edict...
Mm-hmm.
What are the other words?
Laws.
All the other words we talked about. Statute. Would override a city.
Not necessarily.
It would, but not necessarily. And
not if the city is authorized to have...
And that seems to be the case here, that New Hampshire has said, hey, you want to do a thing out of your home, sell some stuff, as long as you don't make more than, whatever, 35 grand a year or whatever on it, that you're good. It's fine.
That's what they said, but...
However, apparently not.
New Hampshire is what they call a... it is not a home rule state, so I don't know if... it's a non-home rule state, whatever the opposite of home rule is.
Not a home rule state, that sounds fine.
State rule.
State rule, yeah. And what that means is that cities or towns are not supposedly authorized to make their own ordinances up out of thin air.
Override, yeah.
They have to be specifically authorized by the state. So there is some sort of authorizing law, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always do this. But supposedly there's some authorizing law at the state level or statute that says that cities and towns are allowed to have health code regulations. Cities and towns are allowed to have zoning regulations. Cities and towns are allowed to, you know, you fill in the blank. There's different things that authorize this.
Okay.
Some towns do. Some towns don't. Some cities do. Probably all the cities do.
Some towns, if you put out an item that needs refrigeration, it'll be fine. Whereas in other towns, it's a danger to the public health.
Well, and then there's, like, disputes about stuff like that. Like, I think in England, like, eggs just sit outside.
Mexico.
Mexico.
There's no refrigeration for eggs there.
But in the U.S., eggs are refrigerated.
Well,
it has to do with the washing of the eggs.
Yeah, it has to do with the washing of the eggs. That's true. Also,
so what, if you get a poopy egg, you can leave it unrefrigerated?
Yep, basically.
But, but if you wash the poop off, it's got to be refrigerated?
It's not the poop. It's other
whatever
stuff
it is,
that
yeah.
comes from the vent of the chicken. But, yeah, I mean, that'll help it keep longer. But, essentially, eggs will keep outside of the refrigerator for a period of time. They'll just keep longer in the refrigerator. So I would recommend refrigerating your eggs. However,
they don't even do it at Walmart in Mexico.
And then there's,
it's just, just sitting out
there.
I grew up in Wisconsin, and you can go to any bar in Wisconsin, not outside of Wisconsin, maybe in Minnesota, perhaps, maybe in Illinois, perhaps, but outside of those three states, you can't find this. You can go to any bar in Wisconsin and be like, hey, you got some pickled eggs?
Yep.
And they will have this big-ass jar of hard-boiled pickled eggs that are good forever. Literally, they were hard-boiled and then dropped into this pickling solution.
Mm-hmm.
And they just sit on the bar back waiting for some hungry, drunk bastard to be like, well, I need a snack. And then they feed you this pickled hard-boiled egg, which, of course, gives you
who fishes
the
it
farts
out of
and the craps in the morning, right?
Oh,
but,
my
you
God.
Know, and if you eat more than one, you poor bastard. But they exist, and they are delicious at the time when you are most snacky, right? But my point is
who fishes it out?
They have tongs.
Okay.
It's like a big, giant...
I've seen the jars.
Pickle jar.
Yep.
There's a pair of tongs.
Do they drop it in a glass, or is it right in your hand?
It's usually like either a napkin or like a Dixie cup.
Oh, okay.
Right? And they just, you know, here you go, sir, right, kind of a thing. So there's no... Like, it follows all the no food touchy rules and all that kind of stuff, right? Supposedly. But, like, my point is that there are ways of preserving eggs outside of refrigeration.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other issue, according to the city here, he says this is more of his quote, right? So he was saying, look, we just need to go into their kitchen. We got to make sure their process is safe. And that's an annual inspection because nothing could go wrong in a year's time, right? Like, they couldn't get dirty or anything in the kitchen or hire somebody that doesn't know what they're doing.
I don't know about you, but I can dirty up my kitchen in about 30 minutes.
Right.
An annual inspection seems inadequate. It seems like a perfunctory thing in order to charge a fee.
That's what it is.
And, I mean, like, you can see whether or not they have the right equipment, but you can't see how they care for that equipment.
No, you can't.
They could wash it once a year just before you come.
There could be rats running all over the place. You have no idea.
They're home.
Yeah.
Right? Rats running around their home as though they have no incentive to keep those out.
I don't doubt, he says, they were doing everything they needed to do. It's just, we want to inspect the places that provide food to the public. The other issue...
He doesn't mention the fees.
No, he doesn't. Although he does say he claims that they're affordable. The other issue is that they were selling food from
a residential... Well, good, then he can pay them.
They were selling food from a residential property, which he said is in violation of the city's home occupation rules.
So what's the point of getting them to come in and look at my kitchen if you're not going to let me sell them from here anyway?
No, they won't. Round said that's just commercial versus residential property, trying to level the playing field with businesses that go through the process of getting a brick-and-mortar location and getting a commercial kitchen.
So to those people who believe that the United States of America is a capitalist country, you're wrong. It's a fascist country because all of the ability for anybody to sell anything to anybody else is predicated on getting permission from an organization of violence first.
Well, and you're not going to get the permission unless you have what he describes here, a commercial kitchen. What does that mean? You need to have a vent hood, which is like $200,000 or whatever.
You have to be certified commercial.
Right. You got to have fire suppression devices that are a certain level. Right. There's all kinds of requirements. And we're talking about a $300,000, $500,000 bill if you aren't, if you need to renovate or something like that. If you have some property that doesn't already have those things. And, of course, if you're going to go into a place that does have those things, you're talking about $4,000 or $5,000 a month in rent that you're going to be paying in a place like Keene.
If you're just a person that all of your family and friends is like, damn, Mark, you're a really good cook, man. Like, that thing you make every year or twice, whatever it is, that is delicious. holy crap, I bet you you could sell that and make a profit. And you go, yeah, Captain, I bet you I could too. Now,
but
to go ahead and do that, however, requires you to do the dance of the monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And by the monkey, I mean that of the state. You cannot engage in selling your most delicious, according to everybody you know, your family and your friends and all your acquaintances who all agree overwhelmingly that this thing you make is frickin' delicious, right? Before you can sell one of them, right? If you don't do the dance of the monkey, you're going to get attacked by the state.
Now, you do have to give the market credit for being amazing at doing everything it can within the stupid arbitrary bounds of the state,
yes,
to provide opportunities for people. So there are things called commercial kitchens you can lease. There's a certain name for them, I think.
There's ghost kitchens. There's all sorts of things where, like, you could approach a restaurant that closes from, you know, 9 p.m. until, you know, noon the next day and be like, hey, while your kitchen is sitting dormant, right, and you're already certified, could I pay you a fee to borrow your kitchen? And therefore, right, like, the market does provide methods to get around that. However, that's still compliance.
It is. It is. But I want to mention it because it is, and I know there is something like
if
that.
If you're an entrepreneur out there, you're trying to make your cooking business go, you're trying to, like, this is one way that you might get around this crap.
Because most people, most entrepreneurs aren't activists. This is why these ladies aren't making a stand. They're just going to do what they're told to do, and they're going to fight.
They're not
going to
do anything.
No, they said they're looking into other options.
They're going to look into other options. But, I mean, look, the option of going to a commercial kitchen and then taking your product and putting it in a bricks-and-mortar store so that other people could sell it for you was there already.
That's not their vision. That's not their dream. No doubt about it.
And it's, you know, the barriers for entry are already there. He said as much. He said, look, we put barriers for entry into the marketplace so that only people who pay our fees and rent commercial space can possibly make a living.
Yep.
This is this law that New Hampshire passed in order that people might have cottage industries will not stand in Keene. We cannot have this. And you're like, he wants nothing to do with this. By the way, this would not happen in Morazan City.
We'll get into Morazan here in a little bit. But yeah, it's a great point. Look, if you're moving to Keene, New Hampshire, you're not moving here for the economic freedom, that's for sure.
No, you're not.
It depends on where you're coming from, right? Because, like, I came from the Seattle, Washington area.
You did, yeah.
And Keene is far more economically
free
than the Seattle, Washington area.
But it is not.
It's not the reason that I came here. It's just a side benefit.
But look, apparently Seattle, Washington is covered with people's homes on the sidewalk. I think that if you set up a bake stand in Seattle, Washington, the bureaucrats and the cops have so much to do there.
I disagree.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm just curious, but what
Seattle
I've seen
police are some of the worst. What's the word I'm thinking of?
Petty.
Reputation wise,
they haven't gotten rid of the homeless problem.
Well, of course, because there's no incentive for them to do so.
If the homeless start selling baked goods, there's going to be an incentive?
Well, the homeless aren't going to sell baked goods.
They ain't got no oven, right?
They're not going to rent a commercial space or whatever. Seattle PD. In particular, like, I sent a video of, it was the protest at the co-op here in Keene, right?
Yeah.
Where the wheelchair lady, during COVID or whatever, the wheelchair lady was denied service because she wouldn't wear a mask for medical reasons. And so there was a protest held at the co-op, and a bunch of people with cameras or whatever went to the thing. I sent a video of that to a couple of friends of mine in the Seattle area, and they were like, they watched it, and they were like, what? I reckon you might get shot for doing something like that in these parts.
Yeah, right?
Because Seattle PD are the most militarized police I have ever encountered.
Wow.
Now, I haven't been to a whole bunch of big cities, but the last time I encountered Seattle PD, ski masks, flak jackets,
jeez,
assault rifles, right? AR-15 style rifles, right? Military boots, right? Helmets, communication gear, right? Tanks, right? All that kind of stuff. They had it all. Ladies and gentlemen, if you believe you are not living in a police state in the United States of America, you're wrong. Period.
Yeah, just have an unlicensed bake sale in Seattle.
Well,
see what happens.
It's a good thing because otherwise Seattle would slip into that cesspool that is Portland.
So a little more here from the from the mom here. So again, the bureaucrat is saying this is all about a level playing field, meaning that the existing businesses, the ones who've paid the licensing fees and are in a commercial kitchen, they don't want to have to compete with a mom.
This is
just cooking up cookies
this is
in her
government,
kitchen.
Government creating, I don't even know the words I'm thinking of. They create an environment in which you must pay. Basically, you're bribing the government for the ability to sell whatever the heck it
That's
is
right.
you're making. And, like, this should just not exist at all.
Well, the truth
this stifles
this,
innovation yeah. across the board.
And it stifles competition as
yes.
well. I mean, cookies aren't particularly innovative, but selling them from your front yard would be more likely to happen in a place where there's no regulation whatsoever. And that means there would be no barrier to entry
right.
for anybody that wants to just sell their grandma's chocolate chip cookie recipe from their house, whether it's at a garage sale or whether it's every day of the week, however often they want to do it. And that, of course, would likely bring the price of cookies down because there's, you know, more cookies available at any given time. But it's going to piss off the people who got the commercial kitchen, who paid for the license, and who are the real ones being protected here. It is not the so-called consumer, and that is what these bureaucrats
right.
will masquerade. They'll say, well, this is just all about safety. No,
right.
it's about protecting the existing status quo from a mom who wants to sell cookies. That's what it is.
And I'm curious what would happen if these moms made these cookies in Roxbury, the mm-hmm. next town next door,
yep.
and then sold them at this location.
Ooh,
so they're not made in the city of Keene where, you know, they would need to be inspected or whatever. They can only be sold
right
at this location because this is the true concern. He first trots out the what they call the mot, you know, the good argument, the best argument. Hey, you know, anything can happen in a commercial kitchen. We just want to check out and see what happens. And, you
well,
know, they're making people's food here, and people are consuming this. This is not like we're talking little macrame baskets here. This is food.
This is dangerous.
Right? So then you say, well, look, turns out the food wasn't made in your jurisdiction. Now what do you do?
Well,
it's a level playing field.
This is
yeah.
the thing that only libertarians, I think, or voluntarists, anarchists, whatever, people of this ilk think of, right? Libertarians are infamous for trying to figure out a way to, like, game the system, you know, so that the system can't affect them in a particular way, right? But, you know, it's sort of it's not in ignorance. It's in, like, they do it because the system exists. Whereas if the system itself just got the hell out of the way, they wouldn't have to do
sure.
any of this hoop jumping and form filling and, like, go to make the cookies in this town but sell them in this town. Like, none of that should exist. The people should just be able to make cookies in their home oven at home and sell them on their front lawn.
What a
period.
Radical statement.
I know I'm an extremist.
Now, they do say here, Captain, that an instance like bake sales or a children's lemonade stand are exempt from these restrictions.
So if these ladies put their kids' names on it?
Oh, no. Because they're only up for a day or for a short term, as are people selling produce and products like farm fresh eggs, because those aren't prepared foods. But in the case of these two women's cookie stand, the bureaucrat said that it looks like it was an indefinite operation.
Weren't they
sure.
only operating for a couple of months? According to the article?
Yeah.
They were, but they didn't seem like they were temporarily there, according to the bureaucrat.
Didn't think they were going to shut down in winter, for example.
He said while there's no threshold for the number of complaints the department receives before it looks into a food concern.
So it could have been zero.
It also doesn't actively seek out instances of noncompliance, instead relying on the complaints to inform their staff. But he said officials encourage...
Even if the complaints come from their staff.
He said the officials encouraged the ladies to contact the city's community development office, which I think they've renamed the code enforcement department to that, to find a solution on how to keep their stand going in another licensed format. That may cost them an additional expense, but Round said licensing fees are, quote, pretty minimal, and that the city isn't profiting from them, solely
the hell they're not.
For administrative costs of inspection. He says, oh, this is the mom now. She says, we would love to continue this if we can in some form, highlighting the interest in giving proceeds to community nonprofits. She says, we're not doing this as a business model. We're not trying to make money off of this. The two neighborhood moms say they understand the situation and want to keep their idea of baking together going. Quote, this isn't going to stop us from baking things. It's just that we need to find a place or a right. way to do it.
Right. Because weren't they only trying to sell their excess? Like, they made
That's what they said,
so
yeah.
many cookies in a year that they, you know, made gifts for everybody and gave them away or whatever, and they had some left over. And they were like, yeah, let's
just
sell
them. That was the way it started. And maybe she's downplaying the idea that this was turning into a business. I mean, they were coming up with packaging and ingredients.
Well, a lot of people, especially a lot of people in Keene, New Hampshire, probably think that making money
is wrong.
It's despicable.
Yeah.
I mean, making money, that's what people do at jobs.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there. So she is essentially trying to play to the Keene audience, I think, by saying these things.
Yeah.
But the most disappointing, of course, line here, I want to restate it. It's not going to stop us from baking things. It's just we need to find a place or a way to do it right. And that is the mistake to suggest
yeah.
that the way of doing things right is by obeying the government. And that is the way to do things obediently.
Right.
But there's nothing right about doing what these bureaucrats say. They are committing a wrong against you. They are violating your right to free expression and to free entrepreneurial spirit to teach your kids how to make and sell cookies or whatever. They have violated you at a fundamental level, and they have wronged you.
Obeying
them is wrong.
When they came for the trade unionists, I did not stand up because I was not a trade unionist.
Yeah.
When they came for the home-baked cookie makers, I did not stand up because I was not a home-baked cookie maker.
Well, consider us standing up. If we could possibly support these ladies, we would. But the problem is, they don't want the kind of support from people like us.
And what they need to realize is that they did nothing wrong.
That's right.
They already did nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with their decision, their vehicle, their marketing techniques, their ingredients, their cooking. There's nothing wrong with that other than some bureaucrat with a badge coming to them and threatening them.
I would like to extend to these ladies the offer that for one penny per baked good, they can have a bake sale for the Shire Free Church.
Yes.
That's not going to solve the problem. Because
we don't know. They're outreaching to the bureaucrats to find solutions.
If the bureaucrat says it's an indefinite operation, then they're going to say you need a license.
It might be different if it's a not-for-profit.
No,
Religious organization.
No, it won't be. And in fact, the way we read these stupid ordinances back in the day, this was 2014, Garrett Ian was one of the activists here at the time in Keene. He wanted to protest the city's stupid ordinances about food preparation by going out and just giving away food.
Right.
It is illegal by their ordinances to simply give away prepared food. It doesn't even have to do with charging for it. It doesn't matter if it's hot. It doesn't matter if it's cold. If you have prepared food and you're giving it away to people, they say you need a permit. We got more coming up here. It is Free Talk Live.
It's obvious. We're being let down by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media are distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the real concerns of American families. Countries we're at odds with are hoarding food, financial systems are strained, and supply chains remain too fragile. We can tell something is coming, so we're preparing. Folks are getting into self-reliance and investing in emergency food storage. And My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, makes it easy for you to have peace of mind knowing you're prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. And while you're there, stock up on water filtration, heirloom seeds, and emergency gear, too, at MyPatriotSupply.com. It's time to prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Anyone can fall victim to moving fraud. Know your rights and responsibilities.
There was never really a valid contract.
Movers must always give written estimates.
I was bound to an estimate, but it was after the fact.
Be sure that any document is complete before signing it, and that it includes information to determine the final charges.
It was a version that I had not seen before.
Visit protectyourmove.gov to download a free moving fraud prevention guide. Search for registered movers and view their complaint histories. Move with confidence.